I am. Go on the discussion of what are the quantum analogues of the classical concept of quantum mechanics. So, last lecture, we have seen that there is a quantum version of the equation of motion, the Euler-Lagrange equation for field theory, which are the Dyson-Schwinger equation. And today, I'll explain what is the analog, or what is an analog of the action itself. And we'll see that it has both a physical interpretation, it's an important tool to understand the physics of some quantum field theory, and also it has an interpretation in terms of perturbation theory. So this concept, this tool, this mathematical object is called the effective action, or quantum action. So before that, let me start by just reminding some diagrammatics that you have probably seen in QFT1. So first, some diagrammatics of quantum field theory. As usual, I consider the case of the Phi-4 theory. And last lecture, we have seen that there is a generating functional for generating the connected part of the correlation function, the vacuum expectation value, which are given by the connected Feynman diagrams. So let me remind you for the Phi-4 theory, what are the connected diagrams for the two-point function. So if you consider a two-point function, that's a generic connected two-point function. It is given first by the propagator itself, the standard free propagator for the Phi-4 theory. Then there is, if G is a coupling constant, there is this diagram with one internal vertex. I omit the h-bar factor at that point, but it has a symmetry factor which is 1/2, and it has an internal loop which is closed on itself, and this is called the tadpole diagram because generically it's considered to have the size of a the shape of a toad or a tadpole. And then the second, the term of order G squared, or the term of order with two loops, there are three kind of diagram. First, there is this one. You had the second tadpole on the propagator, and it has a factor 1/4. There are two, in fact. And then you have this one, which is non-trivial. It has also two loops, and which has a factor, if I am not mistaken, 1/6. Okay. It's a number of permutation of the lines. Okay, and then this goes on. Now for the four-point function, the first connected diagram of the four-point function is just the vertex diagram, and it contains one interaction, so it's over the G. Then, at order G squared, you have more diagrams. First, you have diagrams where, as you can imagine, you can graph tadpole on one of the propagators. You have, for instance, this one, which is a one-loop diagram with two interaction terms. So it's over the G squared. And it has the same symmetry factor of this one. But of course, you can do that for you can add the tadpole on each of the legs, so you have four diagrams. And then you have a new one, which is this one. Which has one loop, again, two vertices. And it has a factor of 1/2. Check the calculation. And in fact, you can, you know, insert this bubble diagram, if you like, in three different ways by connected. For instance, you have connect this and this to this one, or this and this to this one, or this and this to this one. So you have three different diagrams, which corresponds in the language of high energy physics in having a diagram which carries some transfer impulsion in the U channel, V channel, S channel, or T channel. Okay. So this is the tadpole. This is the one bubble, if you like, etc. Okay. So now you see that, in fact, this is a repetition of the insertion of one diagram. So this diagram is built out of, you know, of this elementary part, while this one is new. So, what's the question? I like to have red, apparently red chokes are forbidden for some reason, why it's the color of Canada flag. So you see basically that, for instance, you have some elementary units of the diagrammatic expansion, which is this diagram, well, this is again a diagram, and this one is new, etc. And in some sense, I'll consider that this, the single vertex, is also an elementary part. So this vertex is an elementary part, and here you have no vertices. Okay. So those diagrams, this one, this one, this one, this one, where I remember that I've attached some line, but the external line is not part of the diagram. So let's designate the fact that the line is not part of the diagram by cutting it out. So those diagrams have an important property which is not shared by general connected diagram. It is that if you cut one line of the diagram, you still get a connected diagram. You see, if I remove this, I cut this line, I get the vertex, which is connected. If I cut this line, I still have a connected diagram. If I cut this line, I still have a connected diagram. So all those diagrams belongs to a class of diagram which is called one particle or one line irreducible. You see. And the difference with general connected diagram is that, for instance, this diagram, if you remove this line, you get a disconnected diagram. So diagrams which are not irreducible are diagrams where when you removed, there is at least one line, when you remove it, it's become disconnected. Okay, so this is the one particle line irreducible diagrams, or in short, in the literature, that's one PI, capital I, are the building blocks of perturbation theory. Okay. And you can write, you know, diagrammatics for those diagrams. And they are, of course, much less. And once you know the amplitudes of the one particle irreducible diagram, you can reconstruct quite easily the connected diagrams, and out of that, the general correlation function. So those are the building blocks of perturbation theory. Those are also the building blocks of compute on when calculating scattering amplitudes. Okay, so these are important. One particle irreducible diagrams. And let me, that's going to be useful in the rest. Use just some notation. First, you know, in perturbation theory, the ordinary diagram, this is just the propagator. It's in momentum space, that's 1 over p squared plus m squared, when p is a momentum carried by the line. Again, I'm using the minus plus 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 signature. So this is minus p0 squared plus p squared. That's the ordinary propagator. Okay, when I remove a line, it means that instead of having an external line with factor 1 over p squared plus m squared, I have an external line carrying some momentum with factor 1. So I'm going to denote this by a propagator which is cut once, so that it's amplitudes in momentum space is 1, and I call this the truncated propagator. So basically, the truncated propagator is 1 over p squared plus m squared times p squared plus m squared. So the truncated propagator is, in fact, in the language of operators, the propagator is the kernel of minus Laplacian plus m squared minus 1, while the truncated propagator is a kernel of the identity operator, which is minus delta plus m squared times minus delta plus m squared minus 1. Therefore, it's 1, the identity operator. Now, for reasons which become clear later, let's truncate twice a propagator. Well, what happened if you truncate? There is nothing. But if you view this like that, this is just minus delta plus m squared squared times minus delta plus m squared minus 1. So this is the operator minus Laplacian plus m squared, whose amplitude in momentum square is p squared plus m squared. So it's a doubly, the twice truncated propagator. Okay, so that's going to be useful in the last part of the lecture. Okay. Okay. So now, so this was my first blackboard. Now, I forget for diagrammatics for some time, and I explain to you what is the concept of the effective action. The effective action is going to be a functional. Remember, we had the generating function for the connected diagrams, which was a functional of a source term. Remember, we had that when I was defining the generating function for correlation function of a quantum field theory, well, written in terms of functional integral. So this is exponential. Again, I'm going to work in the Euclidean framework, but this can be done for the, and we have seen how to do that. I have some action with some theory with some action. S of phi is the action, the classical action. For instance, for general quantum field theory, I'm going to choose integral dx of 1/2 of phi minus Laplacian plus m squared times phi plus some interaction term, which is in general a potential of phi. Okay, I'm again in the Euclidean framework, but this can be extended, and I'll give the result at the end for the real-time theory. And this is the functional integral which defines the generating functional for correlation function of the theory. So this is a generating function, functional for correlation of the theory, expectation value of products of operator. And remember that taking a functional derivative with respect to J of X, the source term, times H bar, gives you the insertion of some operator phi of X in the correlation functions. That's the way you construct correlation functions. Okay, so G of X, so phi is a quantum field. It's a variable one integrates over. So it's the language of probability calcul. It's a random variable, and what we're only able to compute is not actual value of this phi because you integrate over it, but correlation function, you know, expectation value with some weight here, it's of phi. Okay. While G is a classical source term. Okay. And we have seen that out of this, the generating function for the connected correlation function is just H bar times the logarithm of Z of G. So it's another functional of the source term, and this is a generating function for connected diagrams. Generating functional. Okay. And for instance, the H bar factor are such that if in general we want to compute some expectation value of products of operator if x1, if xn, when the source term is not yet set to zero, namely computed with this action, so I'm considering expectation value in a quantum state, which is not the vacuum of the theory, but it's another state, which is the vacuum state of the theory with this additional linear term. So hence, so that's it. Vacuum expectation value for the theory when is different from zero. This is just given by h bar to the power n delta over delta g of x1 delta over delta g of xn of z of g divided by z of g. That's the standard definition of correlation function. Okay. So in particular, if I consider this is for an n point correlation. If I consider just a one point correlation function, I get that the expectation value of the theory when g is not different from zero. Well, the one-point correlation function is necessarily a connected correlation function because you have only one external legs. So this is just delta over the delta g of x of w of j. W of j, the generating function of the connected Feynman diagrams. Okay. And of course, in the physical vacuum of the theory, you have to set j equal to zero. So phi of x is phi of x j when j equals zero. That's what we have seen during the last lecture. Okay, so this was my second blackboard. So now, to get a functional which generates the one particle irreducible diagram, in fact, the trick is the following. And that's going to be the effective action. So we'll construct a generating functional of a classical background field variable. So background field is, for reason which will appear later, the name of the variable. And this variable is not j of x, like here, remember, but something else which I'm going to denote another phi of x, where this is another letter. It's not the quantum field. So this is a phi in tech is var phi in tech, while phi is phi. That's the standard notation. Okay. Okay, so it's a classical field, phi x. And it's defined in the following way. It's just defined, we start from the W of J for the theory with an action, with arbitrary J equals set of J of X. So arbitrary source term. And then we have the equation that phi of x, the expectation value of the quantum field for the theory at some arbitrary j is given by the functional derivative of w of j with respect to j taken at the point x. That's just a repetition of the identity we have. Well, by definition, we call this, so this is a fixed g, this is a function of x, you see. So by definition, I call this var phi of x. This is a background field. So the background field, by definition, is the expectation value of the quantum field as a function of the source term. So phi of x is a functional of the source term. Okay. Now we are going to perform a mathematical transformation, which is something which is very useful in physics, and in fact that you know already, which is called a Legendre transform. That's something which is very, you know, one of the basis of thermodynamics, for instance. In thermodynamics, going from the energy of a system, for instance, a gas, to the free energy of the system means performing a Legendre transform whose respective variables are the temperature and the entropy. So let me do this Legendre transform. So in the Legendre transform, it's the following trick. First, you see, you have a correspondence that for any j of x, j equals j of x, you have some function phi equals the data of all the phi of x. Let's assume that this mapping is 1-to-1. Of course, that's an assumption. In general, it's not true. But it turns out that it's true for the free theory, and it turns out that it is true for the coupling constant of the theory small enough. But assume that if you know J, you know phi, but if it's a 1-to-1 mapping, you can revert it. You see? So assuming that the mapping is 1-to-1, you may have the following problem. Phi equals the data of the value of the background field being given. How could I get the j, the corresponding j, so that phi of x is given by this function? So I invert the question. Given, so the question is, I'm assuming that the theory has such some coupling such that the expectation value of the quantum field in this background, in this source term, is given by this phi of x, which is defined by the background field. That's the expectation value of the field in the state, in the ground set of the theory with j different from zero. You see. How do I compute, how do I get j of x in given phi of x? Okay. Well, the answer is, well, now you perform this Legendre transform by defining a functional gamma, which is, and then I just need not to make a mistake in the sign. So I need to look for 1 second I my notes. Ta-ta-ta. I take the products of J with the background field phi variable minus W of J. And again, J of X G times var phi is D over spacetime of J of X times phi of X. You see. So this object, capital gamma, is J times phi minus the generating function as a function of J. But now I consider this, instead of being a functional of J, being a functional of phi. Phi being given by this equation. So now I consider that this is a functional of phi. Okay, so of course, this makes sense if you know what is the relation between var phi and j. And we know that var phi of j is given by this. So var phi of j is a functional derivative of w of j with respect to j. Okay? These are the two equations which define a functional of the background field, which is called the effective action. So gamma of phi is the effective and it's a functional of phi. Okay. So why are we interested in this functional? A priori, it's complicated to compute because you know already that W of J, if you want to compute it, you have to compute all the connected diagrams of the your quantum field theory. Then you make this complicated transformation. You express this in terms of J, and you get another functional, which is called the effective action. What are the properties of this effective action? First, and it's an easy property of general Legendre transform. If instead of thinking of phi as a function of J given by this derivative of W, if you think of J as a functional of phi in this equation, you can invert the equation. You can rewrite it. So let me. Well. So first, you can invert this equation. You can write W of J as, I put it to the left-hand side, of J of phi times J minus gamma of phi. You see, the equation are symmetric. But in addition, if you know what is J, you can check that if you know what is phi, var phi, the background field, you can check that J is given by the functional derivative of the effective action, which is a functional of the background field with respect to variation of the background field itself. So you see, that's, those equations are symmetric. If I change W and J into gamma and this background field, that's the same equation. So that's why a Legendre transform is interesting. That's the general properties of Legendre transform. So you see, W, well, gamma is a Legendre transform of W with respect to the variable J, and the conjugate variable of J is phi, given by this equation. But this equation is equivalent to this, which reflects the mathematical properties of Legendre transform, that the Legendre transform of the Legendre transform is the identity transformation. In other words, Legendre transform are what's called involutive. Legendre of Legendre equals the identity. Okay. And so, for instance, remember that the expectation value, remember the equation we had there, the expectation value of phi is given by the expectation value of phi, the expectation of phi in the physical vacuum of a theory is given by the expectation value of phi in the theory with an arbitrary system where J equals zero. But in the Legendre transform equation, J equals zero means that the background field is given, the derivative of gamma with respect to background field with respect to phi is equal to zero, you see. So phi of x in the physical field is equal to phi of x with phi of x such that the functional derivative of the effective action with respect to phi of x at phi equals this phi of x. So let me just write phi zero of x. So this is in the theory where g equals zero, equals zero, because this is j. This is at j equals zero, therefore this has to be an extreme. So you see, the expectation value of the field in the original theory is equal to a point where the functional derivative of the effective action vanishes. So they are given by some extremum of the effective action. You see. And that's the analog of the classical equation, that the equation of motion. Remember, what are the equation of motion for a classical theory? They are given by stationary point of the original action. So expectation value of the field in the quantum theory are given by stationary point. Well, stationary point, more or less, not stationary point. Of the effective action. So if you know the effective action, you look for the extrema of this effective action and you get the quantum expectation value of the quantum field. So, and this is hence the name that phi is a background field. That's the expectation value of the quantum field in the background. Okay. So that's the first property. The second property, important consequence, is that let's go back to W. You know that if you compute the connection, the two-point function, the two-point function, and I'm interested in the connected two-point function. Connected part, which is the original phi of x, phi of y, minus the products of the expectation value of phi of x, phi of y. We know from the construction of W of g that this is given by the second derivative with respect to j of x, j of y. Well, there is an h bar squared of W of j. Okay. So it's some, let's call this, it's a full two-point function of the theory, of an interacting theory. So let's be given by, that's some, let's call it W do 2 of xy. So it's a kernel of an operator. So that's given by the sum of the over the two-point function of the theory, x and y. So that's the kernel of an operator. Well, a property of the Lejeune transform, which is not very complicated, is to show that now if you consider gamma 2 of xy, which is the second derivative with respect to background phi of x delta of delta phi of y. Let's call this gamma 2 of xy. That's another two-point function. This is the inverse of this. Okay, I'm sorry, inverse of W2. So this means, what does this mean? This means that W2 times gamma 2 equals the identity, or in terms of kernels, that integral of a dy of a W2 of xy times gamma 2 of yz is just the kernel of the identity operator. Therefore, this is delta of x minus z. You see? So that's the second very important property. Or for a theory which is translationally invariant, where this is a function of some momentum p, momentum space. Similarly, gamma 2 of p is going to be some gamma of p. This means that W2 of p times gamma 2 of p equal 1. That's a transform, Fourier transform of the delta function of x minus y. Namely, this means that gamma 2 of p is the inverse in momentum space. Gamma 2 of p is the inverse in momentum space of the two-point function. And this follows from this relation that this is the inverse of this. And this follows, in fact, just for a property of partial derivative. We know that phi is dw over is delta w over delta j at different points. Therefore, delta phi over delta j is delta w over delta j, delta j. Therefore, it's a two-point function connected. While gamma 2 is, we know that j is delta gamma over delta phi. Therefore, delta of j with respect to delta phi is delta of gamma over delta phi, and this is a two-point function associated to the effective action. And but this is also, we know that delta phi over delta g, when you have a function of, when you make a change of variables in a function which is dependent on w, you know that delta phi over delta j is just the inverse of delta j over delta phi. That's the fundamental properties of partial derivatives. There is no big, nothing new. That's properties of partial derivative. When you make a change of variable. Okay, so I think I'm done for this is a good point for first part of the talk. So let's make a short break. And then
Francois?
Yes.
Question. So we were using a gamma 2 xy function, but then how did you define gamma 2 of p?
Just by Fourier transform. If I have theory which is translation invariant, okay, you can easily show that, for instance, W2 of xy is just W2 of x minus y. And so you define the Fourier transform. Well, in fact, it's a Fourier transform. So I should put a hat. And a hat, that's just an ordinary Fourier transform. W of 2 is integral over dx. Well, this is x minus y E minus I PX times W2 of X. This is W hat. Okay, and similarly, you can show that gamma 2, you can do the same game. Integral dx of gamma 2 of ei px gamma 2 of x, because gamma 2 of x is also a function of x minus y. That's standard just Fourier transform. Fourier transform are function of p only, not just that. Otherwise, but these relations are true even if the theory is not invariant. So you can consider quantum field theory, you know, coupled to some external field classical, which is not translational invariant. Those relations are still valid. It takes a more complicated form, but they are still valid if you have no momentum conservation. Okay? Yes?
I think that there might be a little mistake about the blue equation. Somehow there is like two del of phi's, but they're not acting on anything.
Pardon? Which equation? Because all my equations are blue.
One.
This one?
No, above.
There is nothing blue. This one?
Yes.
No, this is a what? So what's the mistake?
I think it should be like two deltas acting on the functional gamma, right? Or something like that.
But yes. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. You are very good. Oh, of gamma, yes. Gamma. So this is, yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is gamma. And yeah. Sorry. Well, thank you. You are very good at finding my typos. So go on. Okay, this means that I needed a break. So let me. Drink a bit, and after the break, I'm going to do some more explicit calculation because this was very formal, of course. So,
François?
Yes?
So, it might be really like a silly question, but like how the expectation value of the field in the original theory is unique, right?
Is it?
It's unique, right?
Usually, yes. The assumption is that it's unique.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Why stationary point of the effective action is why stationary point of the effective action is unique.
Good point. That's because there are theorem on the Legendre transform. There are some theorem of the Legendre transform that I have not been that explained to you, and I should. There's a theorem which states that the Legendre transform of some function is a convex function. Yeah. So, the general theorem, for instance, that Legendre transform for any function, for a general function W of J. Its Legendre transform, gamma of phi, is convex. Well, a general. So it has a unique minimum, and it's a property of. And basically, the idea is that since if you trust this calculation, you see that. This is the gamma 2 is the second derivative of gamma. It's what is called the Hessian function of the function gamma. And since it is the inverse of W, which is a two-point function, it's enough to check whether the two-point function of the quantum field theory is a positive definite function. And that's easy for a theory which has an action with a which is bounded from below. So positivity of no, I'm sorry, that's the fact that the two-point function phi phi defines a positive form, quadratic form, implies that this is convex. So under a very general assumption, you can show that it is convex. Here it's a mathematical term. I've been doing mathematics.
Because when you want to find the physical vacuum, everything you just said J.
Yes, but computing the property of the theory for general J allows to derive relation for the expectation value in the physical vacuum where J equals zero. So it's it was a good trick.
So the search term is just this trick to arrive at.
Yeah. Well, in some case, it has a physical interpretation, but I can maybe explain at the end of the lectures. That's because it just comes from the fact that W is a log of Z. So when you have, remember, let me get rid of the h bar. W is log of Z. Okay. So if I compute phi, or given it's a function of J, it's a function of J. See, if I compute W of J, I know this is delta Z of J divided by delta J of X. And phi, but this is delta of exponential of W of J, delta J of X. Therefore, when I compute phi of X, phi of Y, this is the second derivative of this. Of this. Therefore, it's divided by Z of G, divided by exponential of W of G, because I have to divide. It's Z divided by Z of G. Okay, so when I apply a second derivative, either I apply it to the Z of G in the exponential, or I apply it to here. You see?
So this is only the connected
part? No. You can do it in two ways. Either. You can do it in two ways. Okay. Yes. Okay. It's equivalent. Okay. If I do it in this way, I'm going to see that.
But that's it out.
Phi of X, phi of Y equal phi of X, phi of Y. Connected, defined by the second derivative of W, minus, because I have to derive phi of X, phi of Y. Yes, what? Okay, let's start again. So now, some actual calculation. First, I'm going to give you gamma of phi at first order in H bar for a general theory. And I'll just give you a formula, and I will not derive it completely because otherwise I will need the full time. But let's consider a general theory with an action S of I. You see? Then, in classical physics, what's important is the derivative, the functional derivative of the action with respect to phi at some given point phi x. So let me call this S prime of phi of x, because it's a function of x. You know. And for instance, for the quantum field theory, I've considered the general quantum field theory with a vector potential v here. This is minus delta of x plus m squared plus v prime of phi at the point x. I'm sorry, there is no m squared. It's minus delta. No, I'm sorry, of phi of x times. I'm sorry. This is minus Laplacian of phi at point x plus v prime of phi of x for a theory like that. Now, if you consider the second derivative of the classical action, with respect to the variation of the classical field at two different points. Again, phi is a original field of the theory. And let me denote this, the second derivative of the action of phi estimated at two points x and y. Now, this is a function, in fact, a distribution of two points, because I take functional derivatives at two different points. So in this case, I consider the second derivative with respect to phi here. So this is, in this case, minus the Laplacian, the kernel of the Laplacian between point x and y, plus the v double prime of phi. So this is the kernel of this operator. This is the kernel of this operator. So this is, in fact, a differential operator acting on function. And this differential operator is first the ordinary Laplacian acting on function times multiplication of the function by the function, which is a second derivative of the potential. Okay, but for more general theories, it can be something different. So this is a function, and this is a differential operator. It's a differential operator because there is an operator here. Okay, so now, what is the main result? This effective action, which is a functional of phi, if you do a calculation order by order in h bar, you do a semi-classical expansion, then gamma of phi, of r phi, now this is a background field. First, when h bar equals zero, in fact, you recover the classical action. So this is the classical action of phi. What's interesting is what is the first semi-classical correction to this. And the first semi-classical to this is just one half of the log of a determinant, of a functional determinant. So it's a log, or but That's cool. Log of a functional determinant of this differential operator. Plus higher order term in the perturbative expansion. Okay, so this is a very important formula because it's valid for general form of the action. A general formula. It's valid for theory which do not depend only on one scalar field, but on several scalar fields. In fact, it's also valid when the fields are not scalars. They can be vector fields, like gauge field, or spin 2, like gravitational field. This formula, well, you have to define that in a bit careful way, but it's always valid. So this is general formula valid for bosons. So spin 0, 1, 2, etc. And for fermions, the only difference is that the 1/2 here is replaced by a -1, which is the usual minus strength associated to fermionic loops. Okay, so that's a very important formula. And the way to show this for, well, maybe I'll first see exactly what does this mean and what are the consequences of this for the 5-4 theory. Yes?
Is the phi inside the determinant this phi or the other?
Pardon?
The phi inside the determinant.
Is the determinant defined?
No. Is the phi inside the determinant?
Ah, I'm sorry. Again, a typo of mine. This is, of course, the functional derivative of the second derivative of the effective action. So this is called the Hessian, in fact, the Hessian of gamma. Well, the Hessian of S. Yeah, it's phi. There is no phi anymore. Yeah, so it's a log of the determinant of the Hessian of the action taken at the value for the field to be the conformal field itself. The background field itself. Yeah. So this is the log of the determinant of the Hessian. Okay, so the derivation of this formula comes from a semi-classical calculation. It comes from a semi-classical calculation. Which is obtained by going back to the functional integral, stating that exponential 1 over h bar w of j equal integral d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s of phi. This is the quantum field minus g times phi. And now, using the fact that we assume that h bar equals 0, so we have to look for what are the extrema of this term. So the points where s prime of phi, the functional derivative of s respect to phi, minus the functional derivative z with respect to phi, so minus j equals 0. You see? And this is going to be some classical field, which is, let's call it phi c of j. So it's a classical solution of the equation of motion in the presence of the source term. So it's a functional of j. And now, in the functional integral, change the variables and write phi as phi c of g plus h bar 1/2 some variation. Let's call it, I don't know, in my notes, I have some notes, but phi tilde of x. So this is a classical part, and this is a quantum part. You see? That's a usual trick to do semi-classical expansion. And expand this in term. And if you expand this in this way, you can write that S of phi minus G of phi. Well, first I set phi to be equal to phi C of G. So this is S of phi C. The first term in H bar vanishes because of this equation. You have no linear term in phi tilde. So what you get only is a term of order h bar divided by 2 times phi tilde, and the Hessian of the action. So the term that I noted, the Hessian of the action at, so the Hessian at the classical solution, phi c. So this is a differential operator, so I can take the quadratic form. Plus term over the h bar to the power 3/2. So this term is a dominant contribution when you want to compute the quantum effect. And this term is Gaussian. In this action, now you have an exponential of minus 1 over h bar s of ic times exponential of something which is quadratic. So you get that this is equal to exponential minus 1 over h bar the classical action at phi c times a functional integral of the exponential of a quadratic term in S tilde, in S, quadratic form with the Hessian. So therefore you get, by the rules of Gaussian integration, determinant of the Hessian at phi c to the power minus 1/2 times some term of order h bar 1/2. So this is a formula which tells you that w of j, exponential of w of j, is equal to this one, this term. You see? Therefore, what you get is that w of j equal minus s of phi c, which is a function of g, minus 1/2 log of the determinant of s under phi c. I'm sorry for those of you which are a bit here. Minus 1/2, well, minus h bar over half log determinant of f second of phi c. So you see the two ingredients, the classical action and the log of the determinant of the second derivative of the action, of the Hessian operator. And now you start from this, you perform the Legendre transform. You walk a little bit and you can check easily, that's done in my notes, that you get the same formula for gamma. Remember, gamma is minus w plus g phi, so gamma is s, but now s for var phi plus h bar over 2, the log of the determinant of the Hessian, but the Hessian taken at phi. So you see, so this formula comes from a semi-classical calculation of a functional integral. Therefore, this formula comes from the just a Gaussian integration. Yes?
I think there's some J phi C terms missing.
No, because the J has disappeared. Because J phi, you know, you see, taking phi C to be the solution of this equation, the term in phi linear in phi tilde disappears. I'm taking the extrema point for S minus J phi. So when I expand, I have some formula, you know, in terms of phi, which has a phi C, which is a function of J. And I'm expanding the integral in this direction. So in this direction, the term, if I note now phi equal phi C plus epsilon, epsilon tilde, the term linear in epsilon tilde disappears. So there is no, and so there is no J here. The only dependence in J is in the fact that phi C depends on J. Okay, so this is a semi-classical formula coming from a semi-classical calculation in a functional integral, therefore coming from Gaussian integration. Okay. So now, let's see what are the consequences for this for instance, the phi 4 theory we have been discussing at the beginning of the course. So this is a classic, so we now have this. So this is a classical action for phi 4 that we know for phi 4. S is basically 1/2 of d phi squared plus m squared over 2 phi squared plus g over factorial 4 phi 4. Therefore, the Hessian of the action here, so this is the action S of phi, therefore S double prime of phi is minus the Laplace operator plus m squared. Remember, this is an operator. So this is this differential operator plus g. I take a derivative of phi 4 with respect to phi twice. So of course, I get j divided by 2 times, g divided by 2 times phi squared. So it's a linear, a term which doesn't depend on phi, times a term which depends on phi. Is it clear? So what I want to compute is what is the log of the determinant of this? What is the log of the determinant of this operator? Dan, you seem a bit puzzled. No? Okay, thank you. Well, if you are puzzled, just raise your hand. This is a differential operator. Well, I apply this to some function. This means that S of phi, if I apply it to some function f of x, what I get is minus Laplacian of f of x plus m squared plus g over 2 phi squared of x times f of x. So this is a differential operator acting on the function, and it's just I multiply the function by another function which depend on phi. So now, what is the log of determinant of this object? Now, I replace phi by phi. I want to compute what is the log of this determinant. Well, first, I use the very the simple formula, which is valid for matrix and that I assume is true, which is that the log of the determinant is just the trace of the log of the operator. Trace, yes?
I think, so the linear term in the phi tilde vanishes.
Yes.
There should be a linear term in phi c, j dot phi c. We evaluate s of phi minus j of phi c at phi c.
No, but it's contained in the second derivative of phi c. This, for instance, here, it depends on phi c.
That one's fine, but over here.
It's there. No. I don't see how a linear term in phi c would appear.
When you're expanding s minus j phi around phi c, s of zero term is s of phi c minus j phi c.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry, this is still a typo of mine. Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question. Yes, so this is a quartic term, and this is the secondary term. And it's precisely the Legendre transform which gets rid of this term. Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Yes?
But the action is not stationary at phi c. So doesn't it sort of happen when I...
The action is not stationary, but the action minus g phi is stationary. And that's what we use.
Yes.
Okay?
Because I don't see why the minus j term appears. Shouldn't it get like canceled with the...
No, no, there is no linear term in phi tilde. But this is a... I'm sorry, that's g times phi c. I'm sorry, I'm making typos. Yes, so this is a classical term. Phi c is a function of j, but so this is a function of, yes, yeah. And so when you make the Legendre transform, this term disappears. That's the purpose of the Legendre transform. And you get this very simple formula. Okay, so let me go back quickly to this. The trick is that you write the log of a determinant as a trace of a log. Remember, this is a differential operator. So this is like a matrix, but an infinite dimensional matrix. So now I can rewrite S double prime of phi as minus the differential operator for the differential operator for the free theory minus Laplacian plus m square times the identity operator plus 1 over minus delta plus m square plus g over 2 1 over minus delta plus m square times phi of x. Phi of x squared. This is var phi. You see? And therefore, I can rewrite the log of the second derivative of var phi as the log of minus delta plus m squared plus, we can rewrite the trace of the log. As a trace of the log of minus delta plus m squared. And when I take the log, I get the sum of the log of the two operators plus the trace of the log of g over 2, 1 over minus delta plus m squared. Times phi squared, 1 plus, I'm sorry, plus 1. That's important. And now I start to do perturbation theory. So I expand in G. I have 1, that a trace of a log of an operator, but the operator is the identity. So the trace, so I expand the log, like I expand the log of an ordinary log of 1 plus x. So I rewrite trace of log of this object as sum from k equal 1 to infinity minus 1 of the key minus 1 divided by k g over 2 to the power k times the trace of 1 times minus delta plus m squared phi squared times phi squared k times. So this term in the effective action is a sum of traces of those non-local operators. Now, write this trace in position space. You could do it in momentum space, but write this in position space. Now we have the inverse of a differential operator, but the inverse of this operator in position space is just the ordinary propagator. You see. So in position space, minus 1 over minus delta plus m squared between two points x and y is just the ordinary propagator, the Feynman propagator. Okay. While the operator multiplication by phi squared is just I multiplied a function f by a function phi squared. So it's just an operator which is diagonal in position space, and therefore its matrix element, phi squared, the matrix element between two points x and y is just delta of x minus y times phi squared of x. So this is a matrix element in position space for the inverse of the Hessian of the free matrix. And this is the diagonal in x position space, local operator multiplication by the phi at x. See. So to make the calculation short, I'm going to write the results. You have k operators, k products of operators. So you can, and you take the trace, which means that you make an identification between the first element and the last element. So you can rewrite this trace of this product of k operators as an integral over k points. So you can rewrite this as integral over dx1 up to integral over dxk over space time of what? Well, I get here g of x1 minus x2 phi squared of x2, this times this, times g of x2 minus x3, phi squared of x3 minus x4, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, up to g of xk minus x1, because I'm taking the trace, phi squared of x1. So I have an integral over k points of products of phi squared at each, I'm sorry, this is phi squared of x3, etc. Okay, so you have an integral over position of the points of a products of propagators between x1 and x2, x2, x3, up to xk, x1. So you can now use that Feynman diagrammatics, yes?
For the phi squared xy you defined above.
Pardon?
For the phi squared xy, are you defining delta times phi squared as the inner product, like the integral, or just the?
No, it's just it's just a product.
Just regular product?
It's just, well, this is, the Dirac distribution is a function of x and y, and this is a function of x.
Yes, and would that be just like regular multiplication or the inner product that you define in terms of integral?
It would give the same thing. So, take it as just as the ordinary product. This is a function of x which depends on y. This is a function of x.
Yes.
And you multiply, therefore, you get a function which depends on x and y. So it's the ordinary function.
Okay.
Okay. Ordinary product. Okay, you get. So we end up with this. And therefore, I'm going to use the last blackboard. So think in terms of Feynman diagrams. What is this quantity here? This trace of products of k operators. I have a Feynman propagators which goes between x1 and x2. Then I have a Feynman propagators which goes between x2 and x3. Then I have a Feynman propagators between x3 and x4, etc. And at the end, I have a Feynman propagator between xk and x1. So I have a loop, a one loop. And at each vertex of the loop, I attached a phi squared. So this means that I'm attaching two phi, which are attached to by just a truncated line because they sit, so there is a delta function. So here I have a phi, etc. Phi. So these are ordinary propagator. And these are truncated propagators. Okay, because this means simply that I can write, for instance, phi squared of x2 as integral over dy2 dz2 delta of y2 minus x2 phi of y2 times delta of z2 minus y2 times phi of z2. And this is a truncated propagator. Okay. So you saw that basically the term of order h bar in the effective action is given as a sum from k equal 1 to infinity of g to the power k with some symmetry factor, 1 over k. There is a factor 2 to the power k. And you get the sum of loops with 2 phi. Truncated diagram. And with phi, phi. You see? So you get the one loop here contribution diagrams. And now, well, let's consider what is the first term. K equal 1. It's a diagram which has just one point. So it is this diagram. You have two truncated legs, one loop. This is the tadpole diagram. And if you think about what is the symmetry factor, well, this is k equal 1, k, so you get 1 over 2. You get the correct symmetry factor. K equal 2. What you get is this diagram, and only this diagram. That's a bubble diagram. That's the only irreducible diagram at one loop for the four-point function. Go into k equals 3. Well, you get a triangle diagram. Okay? Which is the only irreducible diagram for the six-point function. This is the only irreducible diagram at one loop for the four-point function. And this is the only irreducible diagram for the two-point function. So this explicit calculation shows that the identity between gamma of phi, the effective action, and the generating functional for one particle irreducible diagrams. So, in fact, well, you can generalize the argument and show that this is valid for general V of phi action. You can play the game with phi cube, phi six. I think one of the exercise in the tutorial is this. And also that this is valid at higher order in the semi-classical expansion in H-bar. So higher loop. Loop diagrams. So this requires more formal work than this explicit calculation. But all this identity comes from the properties of the Legendre transform. So this Legendre transformation contains all the combinatorics between irreducible diagram and connected diagrams. That's one of the nice aspects of equivalence and combinatorics. Okay, so I'll end up here this lecture. I hope to have convinced you, despite my typos that or mistakes, that this formula derives from a semi-classical calculation that you can perform in functional integral, namely reduced to Gaussian integration and saddle point calculation, and that by reinterpreting this formula in terms of Feynman diagrams, you can see that this is indeed the right object to get all the one particle irreducible diagram. Okay. And we'll come back to the effective action when discussing renormalization. So it's also an important tool for physics. Okay, thank you. Yes?
So here. here the phi that you wrote, or the just the original phi or the background?
Here I'm considering the expansion of the effective action. So phi here is the background field. I'm expanding in the background field.
Okay.
Yes.
So here this is all the fields.
Here it's all. I think I made no mistakes, and everywhere I have var phi fields.
Okay.
Yes. But starting from a theory with a general V of the quantum field, you get an effective action which is a functional of the background field. Expanding this effective action in terms of diagrams, you get the irreducible diagram of the quantum theory involving the original quantum field, original phi instead of this var phi. Okay, maybe I should retype all my notes by using different letters, because if you don't know a bit of ancient Greek or tech, I know tech, not ancient Greek. But that's a standard notation in books. I use them. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.